Folks, we're sponsored today by Donors Trust, the tax-friendly way to preserve your charitable giving. In times of crisis, those with a giving spirit and a desire to build up civil society find ways to be helpful. And that's when it's good to have a charitable resource ready to deploy when they're needed most. Donors Trust offers donor-advised funds or giving accounts. You can use these funds as your own charitable investment account and manage your charitable giving in a way that's smart, tax-advantaged, aligned with your values, and private. Donors Trust clients are using their funds to support charities helping their local communities while also using their giving account to simultaneously support think tanks and liberty-minded organizations that believe our constitutional rights shouldn't get lost in a time of emergency. Now is the time to take a closer look at Donors Trust and join their community of liberty-minded donors by opening a donor advised fund. Go to donorstrust.org/justnews for the ultimate survival guide to charitable giving and learn how a donor advised fund can preserve your ability to give to the charities you love. That's donorstrust.org/justnews.
Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler, the host. The star namesake Victor Davis Hanson is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne Moshabusky Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor, this week, like every other week, there's just a ton of stuff to talk about. I know you spoke and on a previous podcast you recorded with Sammy Wink, talked about some of these classified documents with Joe Biden, but not where they were found. That news has come up since you recorded. So we're going to get your thoughts on garage vaults for classified documents and your thoughts about some of our old favorites, Pete Buttigieg and Adam Schiff, and maybe even Eric Swalwell. We'll get to all of this right after these important messages. Hey, folks, if you've been listening to our show, you've probably heard Victor talk about Hillsdale College. It's one of the few colleges in the U.S. still interested in teaching truth. What you probably didn't know is that they have over 40 free online courses. And Victor is one of the professors in three of those courses, American Citizenship and Its Decline, based on Victor's book, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America, The Second World Wars, based on his book by the same name, and Athens and Sparta, partly based on his book, A War Like No Other, How the Athenians and Spartans Fought the Peloponnesian War. Don't you wish Victor would have been one of your professors in college? Well, now you can join him as he covers some of the main ideas of his books with Hillsdale College's online courses, all available for free. That's right, for free. The courses are 7 to 9 episodes long, and they are self-spaced, so you can take them whenever and wherever. I think I'm going to start with American Citizenship and Its Decline, where Victor explores the history of citizenship in the West and the threats it faces today. Threats like the erosion of the middle class, the disappearance of our borders, the growth of an unaccountable deep state, and the rise of globalist organizations. Hey, start your free course with Victor Davis Hanson today. Go right now to hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. It's free and it's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/VDH to start. hillsdale.edu/VDH. Folks, eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages, to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. For our listeners,
Factor is giving you 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. Use the promo code VICTOR50, that's VICTOR50, at factormeals.com/VICTOR50. Factor Meals eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. That's right. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals. Remember, head to factormeals.com/Victor50 and use the code Victor50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code Victor50 at factormeals.com/Victor50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, the last few days, this information has spilled out, not only that there were these classified documents, well known before the elections, the November elections, but the first tranche was found at the Biden Institute, and then others have been found at his home in Delaware in a garage next to his Corvette. And there were some pictures on today's New York Post of him backing into the garage in his tough guy car. And it really looks like there's a bunch of files in the background. And maybe they're not that, but it's certainly, who would be surprised? I kind of think our president is a tough guy, right, Victor? He can jam rosary beads down your throat if he wants to. We can ride around in his tough guy car and he can put important documents wherever the hell he wants to put them. And too bad. Victor, what are your thoughts about this, the location of some of the of this important material?
You know, it's very funny because they put this poor, pathetic Karine Jean-Pierre out there, and there was nothing to say other than, I'm not going to say anything, because every time anybody said anything, it had to be corrected or it was incorrect. And so he wants us to believe the following, that suddenly, and we're going to do the juicy Smollett, you know, that the bleach doesn't freeze at sub-zero temperatures, and people wander around nocturnal Chicago and liberal neighborhoods with MAGA hats and ropes and bleach waiting to find a black drama star so they can lynch him.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's what Joe Biden, he wants us to believe that all of a sudden, after the midterms, his lawyers were methodically going through his think tank office and saw just by accident a personal thing. And then only the lawyers who were skilled in such matters immediately called the National Archives. And then they sprung into action and ordered a search. And it was impossible to believe that, because we know that lawyers don't go into people's offices. Somebody who was in charge of either collecting the materials or moving them saw them and saw they were classified, so called his lawyers. And that raises the issue. Well, who had the clearances? Did these people who were moving them, did they have clearances? Did the lawyers who then took a look at them, do they have clearances? Was that one or two violations? And then this was known on November 2nd. Why didn't they tell the people what was going on? They hid it just like they did the Bankman-Fried fiasco. They suppressed it before the midterm.
You mean the independent Justice Department is not independent?
No, it's not. And what is very strange about it was, it was kind of, you know, karma, nemesis, payback's a bitch, what goes around comes around, et cetera, because he had called, you know, Trump irresponsible and he'd staged a raid. But as everybody pointed out, there were some differences. Donald Trump, in theory, can declare anything unclassified as president. Now, whether he did formally, that's a point of contention, but Biden can't. This was going on since 2017. It's not like Donald Trump left office and a year later they were fighting nonstop and they called the FBI. This had been going on for I don't know, from 17 to 2022, for 5 years. These classified documents had been in his garage, which I guess Hunter had access to. And they had been in his library. They'd been in his home in an adjacent room. We don't know where else they've been. And then they were supposedly, what, they were related to Ukraine and China and the UK. We know that Ukraine and China were two areas of interest of the Biden consortium, right? Their quid pro quo operation. So the question arises, why did the vice president, when he left office, take out classified information? And he must have known they were classified, or he wouldn't have taken them out. Now, why is he claiming he doesn't even know what's in them? He can't remember. Maybe that part might be true, because he can't remember anything. But my point is, what was he doing with it? Because I'm asking this question in relationship to Trump, because the first question the left raised was, why did he take them out? And the second question is, what was on them? And then without any evidence, they said, well, he took them out because he was going to sell them or blackmail or collude. So they were nuclear codes and nuclear secrets. So those were the two issues that we were obsessed over on the months leading up to the midterm, which, by the way, they used as a weapon in the midterm. Turned out that was a lie. I think it was Michael Beschloss, the quote unquote presidential historian who tweeted out the Rosenbergs. And then our illustrious former CIA head, Mr. Hayden, said, I like that, i.e. Trump should be executed for having the nuclear codes. So nobody asked, though. Nobody said, well, what was on these things? What was the general topics about Ukraine? And why did Joe Biden have it? And you would have thought that somebody, if they were to play reciprocally, would have said, well, maybe Joe Biden had these confidential files because he was studying profiles of Ukrainians or studying profiles of Chinese, or he wanted to know the intricacies in their government because he was exploiting them along with his son to make money. But nobody's even raised that question. I raised it on Jesse Waters the other day, and I don't think it resonated much, but it seems to be a legitimate inquiry. And then, of course, it's kind of like the Watergate break-in that led to the so-called cover-up of the plumbers and all that. So this, I don't know why we hadn't known that $51 million had been given by foreign governments, with at least $14 million coming from the communist Chinese to fund the Biden Center. And I don't think the Biden Center was anything other than using the University of Pennsylvania as a nonprofit front to get an office building. So they could have a headquarters and get a bunch of money and operate in Washington during his campaign. He didn't teach. He didn't write anything. So ultimately, they're going to have to ask, who found them? Were they cleared with security clearances? Once the lawyers contacted the DOJ, did the DOJ take over, i.e. via the FBI? Or did they just outsource it again to the lawyers, which they apparently did because they found another trove? Why didn't the FBI sweep in and secure the Biden garage, the Biden think tank office, the Biden library, the way they had done with Trump? What was on them? What was the purpose? And who had access to these rooms, garages, et cetera? And those are questions I don't think they're going to, if you're not transparent about the past things and not transparent, you're not going to be transparent in the future. And they can't afford that. So I think their attitude is, well, the press got up on its hind legs. That was kind of good because they were such obsequious toadies that they'd lost all reputation. So I threw them a bone. They're kind of angry, and that makes it back and forth. And Karine got a little upset and said, come on, what's wrong with you guys? We get along. Don't do this. And then it'll all be forgotten.
Yeah, something about Biden. Yeah, Victor, that Manchurian candidate aspect of him. And also, did you ever see that British series that the House of Cards was based on? There's a dopey Francis Urquhart main character thing about Biden. I mean, I don't know what they wouldn't stoop to bring in money. I mean, this is at the end, the beginning and end of the day, this seems all about money. Those documents are about the cash cow, the spigot overseas that's going to keep this mafia operation flush in cash. It's just how this guy can be our president.
They're capable of anything. I mean, as I said earlier, what will the FBI not do?
Yeah.
And they'll do anything. They've done anything, whether that's hire out Twitter or alter documents or the director's lying under oath. They'll do anything. And now, and Biden, it's very funny because at the very time, as people pointed out, that Merrick Garland was announcing the appointment of a special counsel, he knew that Joe Biden had done the same thing. He knew that on the timeline. And so can you imagine saying, this is so important, the improper removal of documents, that I'm going to have a special counsel, and then under your breath, oh, my God, the same thing applies to Biden, but I can't do it. So I just I won't mention to anybody, and then I'll lie my way out of it later on if they find out. I don't think they ever thought it was going to be found out, Jack. I think somebody, staffer, I don't know, mover, somebody was in charge of moving the stuff from the office. They saw a little thing that said personal. They peeked in it. They saw classified. And they probably said, woo. And they leaked it. Or they called the lawyers and one of the lawyers leaked it. And then they took over. And the lawyers, not the government, the lawyers then said, oh, my God, let's go over to the garage and the library and the room and all that stuff. But
right.
They were not going to report it because they hadn't for 5 years. Been there for five years. That's what nobody pointed out. 5 blank years that stuff had sat there unsecured, and people probably knew it was there, and nobody said a word. And my biggest nightmare is that this is pure speculation, but Hunter says to Joe, "Hey, Joe, when you get out of office, I got this great thing with Ukrainians and Chinese, but I need to know who's this guy, how important is he? And I want to know what this guy does in Ukraine and who's it, what's this Chinese company? Are they espionage? And then Joe says, okay, I'll bring out some files and we'll study it. And who knows? But the way they are framed it, oh, Joe was just working on a memoir. That was all. So I don't think you can trust anything they say. Had we known about accurate economic data, had we known about Bankman-Fried before the midterms, they altered some of the economic data after the midterms. They altered the Bankman-Fried was exposed. They knew it for a month or two.
Right.
And same thing with these things. They would have lost the Senate, I think.
Victor, like interesting.
Oz or somebody would have won or mastered those closer late races.
Yeah. The Daily Mail is and Fox News also has given some focus to the one of the more comical congressmen in history, Hank Johnson, the one who thought that an island might flip over. But he's kind of the point man for putting out there this idea, this stuff was planted in order to get Joe, not that Joe left it wherever the many places he's left these documents. I wonder, a little conspiracy theory is like, okay, if we're going to get it out there, whoever the we are, the we that wants to get rid of Joe Biden in 2024, let's have this clown be the person that puts it out there.
I was wondering if he's going to say, be careful when you go to the garage. If you stand on one side of the garage, the whole thing is going to flip over.
Right.
But I remember him. I had to testify one time on immigration to his committee. And he was a subcommittee. He was on it. It's frightening that that guy is in Congress. It really is.
Yeah.
It's really frightening. I mean, anybody who believes that if everybody rushes to one side of Guam, but the nice thing about that exchange between that military officer and Hank Johnson was
right
when he says well, I have a worry, and you know, when this tsunami and all this stuff, if everybody rushes to one side of the island, are you worried that it might flip? And you should see the guy's face, like you know, thinking I'm a military, you know, high officer. He's a congressman. They have budget.
Right.
He is blank, blank crazy. This guy is insane. And so he says, we can take that into consideration.
Right. I've watched that video several times. It was a great performance. You got to admit to the whoever was the major or colonel was.
It was good. You know, it's funny about the conspiracy stuff, because when they did the Trump stuff, you remember the FBI did that photo op where they scattered stuff on
right,
the floor?
Right.
And that was a FBI photo op. And there was a few people on the right who said, see, the FBI arranged these documents to make it look more sloppy, right? And they did, I think that's known, and everybody said, oh, they're conspiracy theorists, they think the FBI planted stuff or framed it, and yet nobody said anything about Mr. Johnson. I don't know what the Democrats do with people like him and AOC and, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee, all these nuts. I don't know what they do with them. They just
give them committee chairmanships. So
Maxine Waters is, she and her husband are multimillionaires out of her chairmanships on House subcommittees on finance. But
let's talk about, by the way, making money off being a congressman. I don't think I brought this up with you in advance, but just as a quickie before we go on to other subjects, did you see this report that in the very wee hours of the final Congress, while the Democrats are still in control, that the House Administration Committee, and was headed by that Zoe Lofgren from California, your beautiful state, approved these reimbursement changes that now congressmen can get up to $34,000 additional in a year for various, you know, room, board, whatever the heck, and done in the dead of night. I don't know how a committee can do this and not get approval of full Congress. Sort of like what Republicans were there? Were there any? You know, it's crazy.
I went to Strasbourg once. I led a group there, and we're the EU Parliament. And I think it was on Thursday afternoon. And I said to the group, we won't have any problem with traffic. And it was jam. And somebody said, who was a European, said, you don't understand. They take off on Thursday afternoon and they charge, you know, Friday and then Monday. And they work 3 days and charge us five. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Well, so nice I don't know. The thing is, Biden was 43% and he'd gone up from 39 in the Real Clear Politics. And he polled, I think in the latest poll, he actually went up. He went ahead a point or two of Trump and maybe a point or two down from DeSantis. But I don't know to what degree this thing is being covered, because I don't watch NBC or CBS or read the New York Times, if I can.
Well, I think it's out there a little more than take Tony Babaluski, you know, who's dead silent.
I think everybody should start. If you don't believe in a higher power and a divinity, you have to ask yourself something, that these words that are in every language philologically, they serve the same purpose: karma, nemesis, or vernacular payback. Comes around, old English idea, comes around, goes around. It captures something in the human experience that when you go to excess or you show hubris, you're going to be hit by exactly the same nemesis that is appropriate for you. So you think about it, and they just demagogued that Mar-a-Lago thing to death, and you knew, given the way the cosmos works, it was going to happen to Biden. And they demagogued and demagogued and demagogued this committee, ha ha ha, Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney, ha ha, they're only the people there, we're going to kick these nuts off. And they knew, you knew that was going to happen to them, and then they get shocked. It was so funny how they're just absolutely shocked that anybody would consider doing to them what they did to Republicans. And could you imagine if Kevin McCarthy goes up there and tears the State of the Union address with Biden after Biden finishes? What would they do? What if they impeach Trump in his first, impeach Biden like they did Trump over a phone call, or said, you know what? You went down to Mexico and you left the border wide open, and the Mexican president praised Biden you're the president that has not built one foot, and we've got 40 million Mexican citizens in your country. Right. Thank you. And are releasing the strategic petroleum reserves oil on the eve of the election. Whose interest was that in? Are these student loan cancellations or amnesty for marijuana? All of that stuff was just personal demagoguing and contortions before the midterm at the national expense. It vastly outdoors what Trump did with a phone call and said, hey, these guys are corrupt. And before we release these offensive weapons, which Obama wouldn't sell you, but I will, I want you to clean that crap up. And they said, oh, my God, Biden is a potential political candidate, and he was using the office of president. What the hell is Biden doing by raiding Mar-a-Lago when everybody knew he was going to be a candidate against Biden? So it comes around, and they don't understand there's a force in the world that oversees everything and evens it out. That's why everybody from the Greeks to the Christian period always said, know thyself, notheseoton, nothing to maiden Agon or maiden Leon. On the temple of Apollo at Delphi, on the eastern and western entrances, there's know yourself and nothing too much, because that's the way you avoid nemesis. But Biden is just, he's a creature out of Greek tragedy. I mean, he's the most accident prone, excessive, blowhard, boisterous, dense person that is so self-infatuated that he thinks that nobody would ever do to him what he does routinely to other people.
Well, you say he is his own narcissist. People accuse Trump of being a narcissist, and I believe he is a narcissist. But Biden is a much more destructive narcissist. So, hey, Victor, payback comes to other people. Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, who have been gotten the deserved boots. And let's talk about what their comeuppance was right after these important messages.
If you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters, millions. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why does the IRS target you and not millionaires? Here's the reason: because millionaires have tax lawyers and you don't. You'll pay up plus interest plus penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need it now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and which ones to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. Call 1-800-245-6000. Again, call 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor. Field of Greens is the healthiest thing you can do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I really like the wild berry flavor, and who wouldn't? Yeah, this is nutrition the way nature intended. Here's what to expect when you take Field of Greens. Way more energy throughout the day, sleeping better throughout the night, healthier hair, healthier skin, help with your digestion. My stomach and gut feel much better. Just a better, healthier overall feeling. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to help support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Great news, I got you 15% off your first order. Plus, free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R. That's promo code Victor at fieldofgreens.com, fieldofgreens.com.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Our mothership for this podcast is John Solomon's justthenews.com. Speaking of websites, victorhanson.com is a place you should visit regularly, and you should subscribe to it too, because Victor writes a lot of original material exclusively for victorhanson.com's great couple of pieces out now on the website, What the Left Tells Us About the Left, and then a piece, The January 6th Insurrection. Those are exclusive pieces, ultra pieces. How much does it cost to subscribe? It's $5 to get in the door. You'll love it. $50 for the year. So that's victorhanson.com. Adam Schiff, off the Intelligence Committee, Eric Swalwell, he who was a lover of a Chinese spy, both got payback from Kevin McCarthy. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, he was very good in his press conference. They thought they were going to shame him, and he just tore Adam Schiff to pieces. He said, what is he hasn't done? He's lied. He completely read into the congressional record a version of the call, which is completely a lie of Trump. And then, of course, he smeared Devin Nunes and said that his majority report was wrong, and it was just projection. Everything in his was a lie, and Devin Nunes's was correct. We now know he went after Mr. Sperry, the Real Clear investigator reporter, and begged Twitter to sick their censors on him as if he was some, low-level Soviet commissar going after somebody. So he routinely lies. He'd always go on television and bite his lip and look and crease his brow and say he's very worried about Russian collusion. It's at the deepest levels of the Trump administration. But because he has got this sensitive responsibility as the head of the intelligence, he just can't disclose the information that's at his fingertips. It was all a lie. So he's kicked off, but I think he was going off anyway. And Fang Swalwell, she was an expert, I think she left in 2000.
You knew her, right?
I didn't know her. I think I told you that.
I think you met her. I know, but I didn't mean
Yeah, I wrote some very critical things about China and its infiltration of U.S. elite business people and politicians. And I got this weird call from the Chinese consul in San Francisco, supposedly, and it said, we have somebody who wants to talk about your incorrect views. And I said, it's 2:00 in the afternoon. I'm going home. I was at my Uber office. And all of a sudden, she said, she was the consul person. And she says, I'm outside the Uber Tower. I want to talk to you. Just something was weird. So I have two people that work for me. Very excellent. And I asked them, I opened the door and I asked, them to stay there. At least one of them did the whole time. And this woman came in and she had on skin tight. I've never seen tighter jeans with knee boots,
Yeah.
And a white blouse kind of open too much with shades on. And she had some gifts. And I explained I couldn't take the gifts.
My kind of counsel.
Yes. Yeah. And then she started this Chinese accent, heavily accented. And did I know that the Japanese government was criminal and it hadn't changed since World War II and all this stuff? And I kind of listened to about 3 minutes of it. And I said, I'm really busy. This is just propaganda. Is that what you guys do? The consul's office just reads op-eds every day. And I've been very active in California politics and making sure that China, because of our population, they need to be protected. It was all this crap. And then after a while, I said, I'm done. And then she just broke out in a Valley Girl accent. and I can't remember the details, but it was something like she said she went to Cal State Hayward or some Cal State campus.
Victor, I know our listeners want to hear you imitate her, but
I will. She said, okay, man. It's like, cut the crap, man. It's like, okay, no more. Let's talk turkey, man. Okay, I want to know something, Buster. And then she wanted to talk about the United States and going into the South China Sea. And just, it was very funny because she said,
Buster.
Yeah, she said, so, man, we go in where we fucking F word, we want, and you don't do blank, blank. Okay. And then guess what? You don't do nothing. And why don't you do nothing? I can't understand, man. So tell me what to do. What's Obama's doing? And I said, I don't know. She goes, I can tell you what he's doing. He's trying to suck us in. So we go too far and over Japan, or we go into Taiwan, and then he's going to have a bear trap. I said, if you want to believe that, it serves our purposes of deterrence. And it was amazing. She went from a heavily accented Chinese English to pure for San Fernando Valley girl.
Talented lady. Wow.
Yeah. And then she, you know, when she saw the door was open and I was an old guy and there was somebody there and I wasn't going to take her gifts, but which reminded me, I didn't know that until she reappeared for a brief period. I think it was in 2015, right? Or is it 16? Right, with Swalwell. And I thought, wow, he is one of the dumbest people in Congress. He's one of the most arrogant. He would be a perfect target for this woman. And he was on the Intelligence Committee. And
amazing.
Did he ever confess or he just didn't deny that he had carnal relations with her?
I think the latter.
He said he didn't deny it.
I don't think he admitted to it. Put it that way.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but he's
the idea
regardless.
That he was involved with this Chinese espionage person. And I think finally they sent her home or they had to get rid of her and then I found out, I mentioned to somebody, I can't remember who it was, and said she popped up everywhere in Silicon Valley at every local Congress, Democratic Congress candidates fundraising. She was there. What's that guy's name? Ro Khanna or whatever his name is. She was there. Swalwell, she was there. She was like Zeilig. She was everywhere. And how anybody could be so stupid to think that that clumsy spy operative actually was anything other than what she was is just amazing. So I thought, wow, nobody would ever fall for this, you know?
Yeah, well.
And she said, hey, man, it's like you want to go over it. And there's a restaurant on El Camino. It's very across the Stanford campus, very expensive. She goes, hey, man, let's go have steaks and beer and fries. Okay, man. And I said, no, I don't think so. And I kind of played like I was, well, yeah. I am. I was about 63 at the time. And I acted like I was an old man. I said, it's getting late. It was like 3 in the afternoon.
But I got to go take my Metamucil and have a nap.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then she got angry when I said, I can't take your gift. And she stormed out and left it there. And I think it's still in the bookcase. It's a little, what do you call it? You know, a tapestry.
Paperweight?
No, it's a hand-painted Chinese tapestry. But I'll give it to charity if I can ever find it.
It's probably a listening device. Hey, Victor.
Thought of that, yeah. But what do I know?
Hey, we need to talk about Pete Buttigieg. This was a bad week again for Americans traveling. It was one of the few weeks, Victor, you have had your own problems. You don't need a national breakdown of the travel system to have travel, your own travel crises. But yeah, a real, blank storm earlier this week. The whole U.S. air system shut down because of some glitch. And then strangely later in the day, the same thing happens up in Canada. Our esteemed Secretary of Transportation.
Mayor of South Bend.
By the way, Yeah, I mean, the guy who put in bike racks in South Bend, he has been spending his time when he is actually at work, you know, when he's not on paternity leave, he is spending his time doing what? Trying to fix these antiquated. I heard on someone talking on Fox, I think this system that had its the trouble had is over 30 years old. And from the government standards, isn't even supposed to be replaced for 6 years, but clearly is in a bad way. No attention to that, but we make sure he makes sure that we have changing FAA language at NASA and other places that's inclusive. That's really important. Secretary of Transportation, let's focus on inclusive language. Screw this. Anyway, this
I wrote an article about this. An article once called the Bloomberg Effect, and I said it was always characteristic of incompetence to go after the misdemeanor or the irrelevant because they can't deal with the existential or the felony. In other words, Michael Bloomberg, during that historic snowstorm, couldn't get the snow off his street, but instead he was either lecturing about global climate change or he was talking about supersized drinks, anything other than address the problem. This guy was put, this is what's so weird. He always plays the victim. I'm been a gay man, and it's very hard to be a gay man and a gay man, gay man, gay man, as if that is all he is. And so what people don't realize is, or he doesn't realize, usually the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, does not become a presidential candidate. He did because he said he was a veteran. He did go over to Afghanistan, although he didn't, as he later admitted, didn't go out beyond the wire, I think he said. But then he's very glib, he's very sanctimonious, he's very rhetorical, and he's gay, and he's gay, and he's gay. And he mentioned that the entire campaign, and then he threw his weight into Biden when Biden started to win, because that was what failed candidates that had no support did to get a cabinet post. He had no expertise in transportation. He was just a woke, diversity, equity, inclusion factotum. So he gets in there and immediately he gets his, was it $50 billion budget? And he starts looking at, oh, I can go after vocabulary. I can say that the Federal Highway Act of the 1960s was racist. We're not going to do that. Clover leaves are racist. We're going to have a green mass transit, even though California's example is a warning never to do what we're doing. But so everything he did was either irrelevant or counterproductive, but it was always woke. And meanwhile, we were coming out of this insane lockdown with this huge pent-up demand, and 30% of the workforce would not come out of COVID lockdowns, either because they were afraid of COVID, or they had COVID, or they had long COVID, or they were getting money from the government. And the labor participation rate was an all-time low. And same was true of our suppliers. And guess what? I flew down to Los Angeles and I looked out the window and I'd never seen anything like it. There was a ship every 600 yards all the way out to the horizon. And then when you flew over the port of Los Angeles, there were cargo trailers just junked everywhere. In other words, it was so backed up out in sea, but it was so backed up inside that these people were just dumping their cargo, their trailers, and taking their rigs back. And then we had he didn't do anything about it. He couldn't. He didn't know what to do. He didn't even go down there and act like he was in charge. And then they had the trains coming in and out of the ports. It was like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. They looked like they'd been blown up and there was trap. Remember that? Those pictures of Amazon packages all over the ground? Nothing.
Yeah.
And then even before the Christmas meltdown, when Southwest Airlines imploded, all these airlines had been given billions of dollars during COVID. Even before that, I had been flying and I had never seen anything like it. You know, I get in the Fresno airport and I'm kind of a nervous person anyway. And I think, well, I got an hour connection in Dallas, and the pilot says, we're going to make a little, we're going to do a funny thing. We're going to kind of make a little detour to San Francisco. I'm like, 180 miles in the wrong direction. We got to top off this oil. I don't gas. I don't know what happened, but they're having some problems at FAT. There's no air terminal. They just, well, we're going to go do it. And then, you know, you're gone. And then I'm in Chicago and I'm sitting there, delay. I was there at 2 in the afternoon. And finally, the 6 o'clock plane takes off at 11 at night. And where I think, wow, I'm finally going to get home at 3 in the morning and we get over Denver. And I got something to tell you. We're just going to make a short little detour because I've been told that there is no gasoline in Fresno and we wouldn't have enough to take off this plane tomorrow morning. So we're going to top off. We're going to go to Denver and it will just that it's just going to be an hour, 3 hours later. That happened to me all the time. Cancel right. flights, no fuel. He was the transportation secretary. And then the blank hit the fan with Southwest Airlines, 7,000 cancellation. And we had the Christmas web. And now we have the computer system. And then every single time, he never takes responsibility. He either says, this place, things were not working well when I came here, or this is not going to happen again. And then you find out that he's going to a soccer match with his wife-husband. He's going to Portugal. He's right. flying private, and he gets angry, and he suggests that if you think that he should not be flying on a private jet while no one else can fly on a public jet, which he's in charge, then you are fixating inordinately on a gay man. That was his implication.
Oh, is that why? So I saw Nancy Mace announce, I think it was her, some bill that he would have to fly commercial. I didn't know he was flying private. When
oh, yeah, he flew a lot of private. Okay. And not that they all don't do it, but remember when, was it Trump's Secretary of the Interior was flying too much private and they went after him, Zinke,
and yeah. also the head of, oh my gosh, he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma.
I forgot his name too. And they had they got forced out of office.
Right. Right. So, the Secretary of HHS, the former,
So, my point is what he does, what Buttigieg does, and that's characteristic of the identity politics industry, is that he poses as a oppressed victim because of a sexual orientation and therefore gets sympathy or attention. But the moment you treat him like anybody else would be treated rather than extraordinarily lenient, which he has received, given his totally incapacity in that job and lack of any experience or expertise in transportation, then he flips it around on you and says that you're only fixating on him. And that's what he does. Remember the photo op with the SUV dumps him off. He gets on the bike with a helmet and he does the last mile to his office and then preaches to everybody about. This is all kind of funny, but in fact, he's very dangerous because he's done a lot of harm to people's lives. And, you know, in theory, the Homeland Security or the Department of Interior or the Department of Energy, he has a hand too in the decision whether to release oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And because that's going to affect your diesel and gasoline prices at the pump, and that's transportation. And again and again, he has weighed in, cancel Keystone, put Anwar off, no more federal leases of new oil or gas fields, et cetera, et cetera. Price gets high. That's good. And Stephen Chu style, because everybody will then either ride a bike a mile like he does or get an electric car or I don't know what, but they won't be able to get in their car and drive. It's very sinister because you can see where this, I'm not a conspiracist, but you can see where this line of thinking is. If you said to Pete Buttigieg and people like him, what do you want? If God gives you every one of your wishes, what do you want? He would want us all to be in mass transit and buses. And we would be bused to high rises. And we would be bused by unionized drivers. And if the buses were not secure and it was not safe to ride the mass transit, then you were a racist. And you can't defend yourself. They do not want the American public in their own safe cars with their own choice, where they want to go, what neighborhood they want to visit, who's control of the driving apparatus. And they, it's this idea that so insidiously they want you dependent in every aspect of your life. You want to live in a high rise, you got to take an elevator, and the elevator's got to be inspected, and we got to be run. And then you've got to have a control of the apartment building, and you're not going to have your lawn with your gas blower and your gas, and you just can't go, you know, cook outside. We're going to control every aspect like you're in a hive.
And
you're
part right. And we can know where you are at every time, point of time, and also know every expenditure. So this $600 limit shows we want to know everything you do, everything you buy.
He's exempt, and they're always exempt. They're the apparat, the nomenclature of the Soviet Union. They have to be exempt. They're John Kerry on their private jet, or John Kerry sending his yacht back and forth to get out of property tax, or Al Gore rushing his sale of a carbon spewing funded cable TV so he can get a cheaper capital gains rate. They always do this. Or the Obamas lecturing everybody about racism in neighborhoods, and his HUD is not going to allow white flight, and but we're going to live in Martha's Vineyard and Kalorama and Washington and a big nice beach house in Hawaii. Yeah. It's so weird that this idea that they can get away with it so easily because they're so morally superior. And
exempt from criticism. I have to share this with you, Victor. I got this screenshot. Someone texted me this yesterday. They know my kids all went to the University of Connecticut. And here's a poster from UConn. It's for some live stream coming up next in 2 weeks. When trolls threaten faculty of color, strategies for universities to proactively protect their faculty. And of course, it's like the Mohammed, whatever, head of this department, that department, but they cannot be criticized for anything. They're exempt. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, think about it. You can't win. So Daryl Hammond has this tragic accident, and almost immediately the race industry starts to publish this narrative that black athletes are subject inordinately to this game of violence, I guess it profits white people or something, even though most of the studies show in some professional sports audiences or TV ratings have gone down, at least they had gone down radically until this year. But the point I'm making is that if you look at these professional sports, women's basketball, I think it's about 15% white, major league baseball, it's only about 55 or 60% white because there's a lot of Latinos, not as many blacks. Right. Football, I think it's about 25% white. NBA, it's 17, 18% white because of foreign, you know, Eastern Europeans. But my point is this, that in all of those, with the exception of baseball, African Americans in this highly coveted, highly compensated, highly leveraged sport where you can make millions because of your social prominence and cultural weight. My God, it's a godsend. And then all of a sudden, it's bad. So which is it? Do you want so-called white people to be, they make up about 68% of the population. Do you want them to be about 68% of the NFL, and then they would be hurt in commensurate numbers? Or do you want black people to be inordinately, disproportionately represented? I don't understand that. You can't win. So when you get to a situation you can't win, then people shrug and say, screw it. I can't participate in this. It doesn't make any sense anymore. So it's like
No one will honestly answer the question you just asked. What do you want? What is it that you really want? Would you just tell me what you want? You will never get an honest answer.
That. It's like Stanford University. They give three pieces of information out. I said before in the incoming class, 23% on their white website says it's white. Okay. So they're using quotas. And now this SAT is optional. Okay. But what was the mean SAT of the people who were admitted, those who took it? They won't acknowledge it. But they will acknowledge it that those who took it, who had perfect scores, 70% of them were rejected, as if that's a badge of honor. Well, we rejected 70% of a perfect. And that almost implies that they had very high standards, but they didn't, because they won't release the actual scores of the people who, who were admitted. And then you're using this quota, and it's almost as if, you know, you say 23% white, that makes it maybe 10% white males. And that's where the wealthy people come out of. And so you're just saying, we don't want, I just get this vision of all of these very, very elite, wealthy people in these rooms at that university saying, we do not want those white working class kids here. We do not want them. And when, if they apply and they have GPAs from Indiana that are 4.5 and a perfect, I don't want that SOB here on this campus. And it's toxic the way that they're obsessed with race. And I don't know what the purpose is. I really don't want to do it, because it's tragic, because it inaugurates a chain of lies. So you let this highly diverse student body in that did not meet your standards, not mine, Victor's standards, Stanford standards, for years. And they must have had them for a reason, Jack. Say in 1995 or 2006, they must have had a mean SAT and GPA, etc. Or otherwise, why have them? So they must have felt that they were important to guarantee the faculty that they would have a level of instruction that would be competitive, and they would turn out the nation's elite, as far as meritocratic elite. And so all of a sudden you destroy those standards, and then you have to do what? You have to adjust the classes, the grading, the content, and then you have to ensure graduation. And then what? And then you have to ensure if anybody's going with a Stanford degree, they get into medical school or law school and adjust there, and then adjust and adjust and adjust.
Right.
And then somebody, you know, you have these people in our society that are African-American that are brilliant, a Tom Sowell, a Shelby Steele, a Glenn Lowry, or this Representative Donalds, right? Or this persecuted, brilliant economist, Roland Fryer at Harvard. And what do? They go after them. They try to make their life miserable. It's almost if they're saying, if you succeed, you are proving that African Americans have the same talent as white people do, and they can compete on any field with white people. And they do it all the time. And you can't do that, because if you do that, you're undermining the whole woke, affirmative action, compensatory, repertory industry. And it's very lucrative for people like us who don't want to do what you do.
Victor, I have to interrupt. I want to ask you about, did you see Joy Reid go after?
Yes, I did.
So
I did.
We've got only a few minutes left, and I got to get a break in here. So let's keep on this theme and get your thoughts on what happened, transpired there. And we'll do that right after this final message.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, I know people are going to send it, but would you shut up, Fowler? Stop. Do not interrupt Victor when he's on a rant. But you brought up this Congressman Brian Donalds, who we know, those of us who watch the speaker drama play out over days, was at one point nominated to be the speaker. And then that guy's got moxie. He went on MSNBC. And I can, it's hard, it would be hard to imagine a more disrespectful interview than how Joy Reid, a black woman, addressed this black congressman, Republican congressman. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, it was one of the most self-incriminatory things I've ever seen on television. Here, this woman, Joy Reid, is incompetent. She gets on that soapbox and all she does is spew racial hatred. When she gets a figure that the white population is the lowest it's ever been proportionally, she's happy and she wants to celebrate it. She buys into Russian disinformation. She talks about the Russian laptop. She talks about the bots. She does every conspiracy. She's completely incompetent. She gives lectures about cultural appropriation and people trying to steal black culture while she dyes her hair blonde gold. She's just a walking contradiction and incompetent. So here you have a guy that comes in who's very successful, father of three, married for, I don't know, 20 years plus, financial guy, and he just tells her that Social Security is insolvent. She goes ballistic, but her main gripe is that she's accused him of being a token. And every time there is a rumor that Joy Reid has no audience and that everybody who's white who has no audience is out because MSNBC and especially CNN are imploding, she plays the race card. They call up all, you know, the new generation of Al Sharpton. This is terrible, depriving a black woman of her voice, all this stuff. So she projects that onto him and says, you know, you're a useful idiot. And he says, no, I mean, people, I didn't. They wanted to nominate me because I'm conservative and articulate. I'm a leader. And, you know, they nominated Donald Trump. They nominated Jim Jordan, that she said, and they didn't get very many votes either, if as much as he did. So the point was that she was a racist because of all the people that were the alternatives to Kevin McCarthy. None of them had any support. They were all symbolic, iconic nominations, as was his. But she was focusing on him because he was black, and she wanted to make the point that if you are black and if you are conservative and if white conservatives appreciate your excellence, and he is excellent, then you're a threat to me, Joy Reid, because I didn't do what you did. I didn't get to where I am because I'm articulate and I'm incisive and I'm analytical. And I'm dispassionate. She did just the opposite, and she knows that. And so it's not going to end well. I don't see any solution to this problem, except if you can guarantee a natural equality result. And the only way you can do that is to every individual who has an equality of opportunity has to take advantage of it. And if there are historical or contemporary nullifying factors of that opportunity or taking advantage of that opportunity, then yes, private charities, Catholic Church, the U.S. government, they can come in and have, you know, what would have happened if 30 years ago in the south side of Chicago, there were 20 parochial schools with uniforms, mandatory Latin, diction, analysis, mm-hmm. English composition, literature, and you got that inner city youth at the age of 6. And you each year turned out 7,000-8,000 high school graduates that were better spoken, more articulate than the average person. I mean, we wouldn't have a race problem today because right. There would be such a meritocracy that, and they'd be, but when you don't do that, and then at the back end, you've got these guilty white people and you give it way down the chain without investing the time at the early years, just instant, we're going to make this person because we feel guilty. And the funny thing about it all is it's reaching the logical end of the trajectory, because once you start doing this, and this is an old idea in classical literature, you know, I don't want to go back to the critiques of Socrates and Aristotle and Pseudo-Xenophon about democracy, but their point was, once you start mandating equality, it never ends. Or as Aristotle says, every person who votes equally, he was kind of a critic of radical, and thinks that his vote is just as important, which is he thinks that's okay, but he will demand equality in other aspects of his life. I want this, just if I can vote just like you, I want a house just like you. I want a horse just like you. I want a boat just like you. And he says it's never ending. And so what you're seeing is the more that we mandate equality, and that suggests that somebody, we, that American society is culpable, then the more that the demands increase, not decrease, increase, until you get to the point where you're going to have disproportionate, so that a demographic that has been six generations from having somebody as an ancestor who was enslaved has legitimate grievances against somebody whose parents six generations were in Ireland or Poland or died marching through Georgia with Sherman to free slave. That's how absurd it is. And it's not going to get better until everybody says we're not going to talk about race. It's right. Incidental. It doesn't matter. It's just not an important topic. Yeah. And we're going to, and for that to happen, I think the white bicoastal elite who started this whole thing out of guilt, has to step up, and they have to, you know, they have to ask certain questions. Why are a record number of African Americans remigrating back to the South that drove them out under Jim Crow? Why, when they went to the North, after three or four generations, they want to go back to Alabama and Mississippi? And the answer is that there is equality of opportunity now, but more importantly, there is still vestigial cultures in those Southern states of traditional values, and that right. that encourages religion and family, and that means your son's not going to be shot down in the street of Chicago.
Right.
And that's a damning indictment of what the left has done to these big northern integrated cities. And if you walked up to Bull Connor and you walked up to George Wallace or Lester Maddox and you said, in 60 years, your South is going to be the most integrated and the most successful paradigm of government, and African Americans who are fleeing to Detroit and Cleveland are going to be coming back, and they're going to be in many places running your state, they would have fallen over. And then you could have said to Lester, Governor Maddox, you know, all these Northerners that are lecturing you on the racist that you are, they're going to drive African Americans out, because they have a weird sort of racism, a condescending racism. And the result is that inner cities in Minneapolis and Cleveland, and as I said, Baltimore, Detroit, they're not working, and nobody wants to live there. You wouldn't believe it's been one of the most ironic things that the old Confederacy doesn't have a one-drop rule like the North does.
Like, right.
The old Confederacy doesn't have nullification of federal law like sanctuary cities in the North. The old old Confederacy has three classes. It doesn't have two classes like California's plantation class in Silicon Valley and then the peasants, the rest of us in California. I wrote an article about this for the New Criterion. It was called The New Confederates.
Right.
Those were the Northerners who emulate the values of the old Confederacy.
Well, Victor, let's, I have to mention, you don't have to comment on this. I saw a piece in Time magazine right before the New Year's, the white supremacist origins of exercise in the U.S. So when you talk about the bicoastal elites, they're on their Pelotons.
you just said it.
Pelotons.
And obesity is racist.
Talk about obesity is racist. To talk about exercise is race. Everything is race. I can't think of anything that has not been called racist. Owning pets are racist. Everything is. If everything is racist, then nothing is racist. I don't know what's going to happen to this, but you know that this is not sustainable in a society, in a global competition, when we have China looking over our shoulder, and we all said this is not going to permeate, thank God, STEM disciplines in the university, physics, math, and engineering.
Right.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it is, right.
And it's undermining the very ability to function as a sophisticated society. And it's going to be, at some point, one or two things are going to happen. We're going to go down the whole woke road, and this thing is going to crumble. Because merit, when you have schools that are deliberately withholding information, in many cases to immigrant parents, that their children were national merit scholars, and deprive those kids of the opportunities that accrue from doing so spectacularly on the PSAT.
Right.
That's sick. And that's not sustainable. And so it's either going to be like that, or it's going to blow up like Me Too. Finally, when everybody was guilty and they started going after Garrison Keillor and Charlie Rose and all these liberal icons, and then they hit a wall with Joe Biden and Tara Reid. And remember during the primaries, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, demagogue, oh, Joe, you're, and then it just stopped. And when they just stopped, they thought, wait a minute, we're cannibalizing our own. It's over.
Right.
Not that there's not some vestigial value from it. And then the Kavanaugh hearings with the circus, those two events, the Kavanaugh hearings, which were sort of a Jacobin guillotine event, and the Tara Reid, that ended Me Too as that kind of frenzy. And the same thing, I think, is going to happen to woke, or it's going to succeed. And if it succeeds, we're done for.
We're done, yeah.
You destroy merit, and they're going to say, well, as a white man, Victor, of course you define merit in your own trip. No, I don't. If you take my field, I can say, here's merit. I'll hand you a page of Thucydides, Funeral Oration of Pericles. Read it out loud. If you can read it out loud, you can be a classicist. Translate it out loud to me. If you can't, you can't be. That's it. And so what do? You try to say that Greek's not necessary at Princeton for the undergraduate major, or they water it down in the graduate program. It's just a whole generation of really critical research, you know.
As you said in STEM also, Victor, and in the extensions of STEM, nobody wants to have brain surgery. But if you were going to have brain surgery, would you want it now, or would you want it 25 years from now? Like, who the hell are going to be the doctors in 25 years?
I tell everybody, I have kids, you know, young people say, "What would you read in classical literature?" I always say, do not read any account of the Greeks. If you get an introductory called The Greeks, and it's written after 2010, but especially after don't read it. It's poorly written. It's inaccurate. The author did not know Greek and Latin very well, and it's politicized and woke. Go back to H.D. Kiddo's The Greeks, and up there, or go back even further if you want to Edith Hamilton. But do not do it, because it's tainted. I said to Sam the other day, it's like it was published in Germany from 33 to 45, mm-hmm. or in Russia from 17 to 89. It's just worthless because it's so ideological, and the language shows it. And they've ruined they've lost so much talent that was not put to use that could have done such great things. And it really shows you, if you can't build mass transit, or you can't send a man to the moon anymore, or you can't keep the airlines running, or you can't, you know, you and I've talked about the scenes of San Francisco that you see in Vertigo written a half century ago, more than a half century ago, compared to now. And it just shows you that this generation, which was not meritocratic, has destroyed their civilization they inherited. And we've got to restore it somehow. And the only way I know how is insist on a meritocracy.
Yeah. Well, my friend, you have served up a lot of a lot of worthwhile commentary and thought today. I appreciate it immensely. Before we end, as we typically do, I do want to give a little pitch for what I do, Jack Fowler. I write a free weekly email newsletter called Civil Thoughts, and you can sign up for it at civilthoughts.com, and it gives you a dozen or more recommended readings, things I've come across in the previous week that I think intelligent people might be interested in reading. Civil Thoughts is a product of the Center for Civil Society at American Philanthropic. So check them out, centerforcivilsociety.com, civilthoughts.com. Thanks very much. So, and thanks to all who listen on whatever platform you listen to, and those who listen on Apple podcasts or iTunes have the ability to leave rankings from 0 to 5 stars. And by the way, Victor, I saw someone, I'm not going to raise a comment, but someone was clearly someone named Karen who was upset that Victor Davis Hanson used that talking about Karens, and that, and I think only gave 2 stars, was kind of upset by that. But
I said
anyway,
Karen.
Oh, you know, we'll be talking about, yeah, you met this Karen type, this archetype of the Karen.
Why was she upset about it?
Because I have a feeling her name was Karen. She didn't leave. She didn't sign off. Yeah. Can you imagine if you're a nice lady named Karen in this day and age?
I know a lot of nice ladies named Karen. I don't know where the term Karen came from. I think it was, they felt that it was a ubiquitous common name for women, white, upper class, suburban, intrusive, anal, retentive, wealthy suburbanites that got in your face. And that generation that's now about 55 to 70 were named Karen more than today.
Maybe they should swap out the names like they do for hurricanes,
Hazel,
or tropical storms.
Gladys or Hazel.
Yeah. Well, here's one comment, though, from Pamela 7644, who writes, as always, a pleasure to listen to you about your dogs and life on the farm. We talked about the last week, Victor. You wrote some wonderful pieces for your website, victorhanson.com. Ultra articles on your dogs. So sorry you have to deal with uncooperative neighbors. This is how my neighborhood is becoming.
Uncooperative. That's a nice euphemism.
Yeah, right. That is a euphemism. That is the euphemistic key thing I've ever heard, given what you've been through with some of your neighbors. Our culture is not the one we were raised in, which is exactly what we've been talking about. So thank you, Pamela 7644. Thank you, Victor. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody.
If you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters, millions. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why does the IRS target you and not millionaires? Here's the reason. Because millionaires have tax lawyers and you don't. You'll pay up, plus interest, plus penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need it now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor, like a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and which ones to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. Call 1-800-245-6000. Again, call 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor.